This is the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I am Phil Taylor. Here with me is Phil Conlon. He's going to attempt to find a microphone. And
yes, good afternoon.
Am we're going to be talking.
Okay, we're on the air.
You're on the air. This is the real thing, you can tell. We're going to be talking to Sandra Farias, and she is a correspondent, that's the wrong word, journalist who has been covering South America for years. She has herself lived in Chile, I think might have been her country of origin, and she's also lived and studied in Argentina. And there's exciting things, if you haven't heard, going on in Argentina. There's allegedly a right-wing guy who is making all the headlines, and we're going to find out whether or not what this story actually is. And I think we're joined by Sandra Farias now. Are you there, Sandra?
Oh, hi, Phil. So good to hear your voice. How are you?
Very good. We're really fortunate in Toronto that we have you as a journalist living here, but who has been writing and covering the situation in South America, and particularly, I think, Argentina. I know that you have yourself lived there, and I believe you were there recently. I think you were there in the spring, were you not?
Well, I cover frequently because I have family still there. I came to Canada 20 years ago, and I left Argentina during a very critical time, too. So I've been, you know, reporting on the Latin American issues for quite a long time already. But thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, well, we really need your help now because the Washington Post is saying that something really dramatic has happened, that there was a primary vote leading toward the elections coming up in October in Argentina. And I guess the debate is, well, not the debate, but the discussion is, are people surprised that a decidedly, I guess, right-wing candidate has came off with 30%, I guess, of the vote? And incidentally, I don't know how to say his name, so I'm going to start by asking, who is this guy, and were you surprised that he won the primary?
Well, I think it took us a little bit by surprise to many people. The first round, as you said, Phil, of the primaries in Argentina's election demonstrated, I think, like a breakthrough of traditional bipartidism after 40 years of uninterrupted democracy, right? The country's electoral vote, as you said today, is completely divided in three portions, and the front runner of the upcoming October election represents the ultra-right wing, Javier Milei. It's someone who is new in politics, so we don't know much about him. He is an extroverted figure, but quite eccentric and unpredictable. And he's behind a cultural battle to transform Argentina into some sort of libertarian paradise where capitalist efficiency will replace the socialist system. Taxes will be probably reduced to a minimum, and even the crazy plan of selling body organs on the open market.
He's described apparently as an authentic, if this guy can be real in any sense, libertarian. And I read really incredible things that he promises to do. One is dynamite the central bank. Another one is he would permit the selling of human organs. That's the Guardian, the Washington Post.
So, yeah, I read the article. Yeah, it's very scary.
it certainly
but
is.
We have to understand, right? We have to understand, you know, the whole political context and why Argentinians are now at this verge of this full tragedy, as you said, right? So we can talk a little bit about, you know, the who is Milei and what he represents. But let's talk a little bit also. I think it's important to touch into the historical, you know, reality of Argentinians, especially for so many Canadian listeners who maybe they don't know exactly what's going on in that remote country. So, you know, if you give me just a few minutes, I could try to give the short version possible of the history of Argentina. But, you know, the historical movement called Peronism was founded by Juan Domingo Perón, and sort of set up the course of an industrialization and state presence in the economy during the 50s in order to bring greater economy and progress to the working class, social benefits to the growing working class in Argentina. So in this new century, and since 2003, these all ideas came to reality by a new president. His name was Néstor Kirchner, and he was a president until 2007, and he passed away in 2010, and was followed by two periods of her wife and prominent lawyer Cristina Fernández de Kirchner until 2015. Her presidency was very important to understand what's happening right now in Argentina, because he's now sentenced by the lawfare of corruption. This is sort of a, you know, to understand what is behind this sentence, because he is proscribed from being a candidate these days, and he is, you know, ruined by this lawfare attack. It's a sort of a judicial undercover strategy that is used so far in Latin American democracies. And we have seen this sort of maliciously prosecution practice, most of them without evidence and orchestrated most of the time by questionable judges, you know, in the system, that seems to apply when leaders are trying to attempt to distribute the wealth and cutting privilege to the wealthiest. And we have seen this occurring in Brazil and Peru and Bolivia and Ecuador. So as a result, you know, of that lawfare mechanism, the most popular female leader of this 21st century in Argentina was proscribed from running as a candidate, despite being highly respected and well, you know, positioned in the electoral vote. It happened something like that to Dilma Rousseff in Brazil and to the actual president, Lula, who was also in jail for a long time because of these practices. And on top of that, Cristina also miraculously survived an assassination attempt almost a year ago. That was quite frightening also for the political system in Argentina a year ago. So to make the story short, after two periods of her government, the neoliberalism again came back to the presidency, and we had a president called Mauricio Macri, who stayed in power 4 years after her presidency. And these 4 years were sending the middle class to the far bottom once again, like in the 90s, right? And bringing back the worst possible economic tool, I think, to the economy that is attached to the International Monetary Fund. Macri continued using the International Monetary Fund, to create more debt for Argentinians. And he continued the path of structural debt and unpaid interest that made Argentina going into default in 2000. And of course, I think you will remember probably all that time of social unrest that we see in the country. I remember clearly because I had to leave the country at that time. And it was awful, you know, to see a beautiful country disintegrated by this economic policy. But this time, in this current government of Macri in 2015, the national debt built up to $45 billion. And, of course, after that catastrophe in 2019, another election again, and the peronism is back, taking back this hot potato, practically, you know. And in this most recent period, Cristina assumed as vice, and the president also called Fernandez, although they are not relatives, you know, Fernandez just happened to be a very common name in Latin America. And then the pandemic came, ruined the economy, already in poor shape, brought back the inflation. The inflation now is sitting at 120%. 120%, can you imagine? With a 25% loss of the purchasing power, especially for informal workers, this is impossible to live in that economy. Most lately, this past recent month, a drought also affected the agricultural industry. Even full-time working families are now condemned to poverty lines due to It's an unmanageable inflation, really. And because of all these calamities, you have to understand the insecurity took back the streets with gangs and violence in almost every city.
I understand that that's another part of his program, is he is in favor of open carry, as they say in Florida, of weapons without registration. So anybody can have one. And really quite a bizarre picture. One of the striking things to me is that you really have two ships going in quite an opposite direction. My understanding is the candidate for the Renewal Front, Sergio Massa.
Yes.
He today, I was looking at a tweet of his, he was in Brazil talking about how Argentina, in solving its problems, needs to do it in tandem with Brazil. Of course, Brazil is one of the most prominent members of the thing called the BRICS. So,
correct.
Now, this gentleman, and by the way, I still haven't learned his name exactly, but this man who calls himself an anarcho-capitalist, he really hates the BRICS. And
of course,
I get the impression he probably doesn't like Brazil. So, some of this, he seems to be running against foreign phenomena. He calls the Pope a communist. As a matter of fact, he called him, if I may say so, a communist turd. The Pope is an Argentine. I mean, you really have a mess in Argentina. Can you?
Yeah.
What do you make? Do you really think this guy has prospects?
Well, he's called, you know, by many parents a false prophet, you know, like Bolsonaro or Trump himself, you know, type of vociferous, bothersome, yelling anti-democratic tone, fanatic individualism, you know, very erratic personality, unpredictable in so many ways.
Yes, and we have to throw in the name Trump. Again, both of them like to think of themselves as Trump figures, right? I mean, it's not just an analogy. They themselves invoke the name of Donald Trump.
Yeah, but we can't blame the electors, right? I mean, at this point, you know, the lust for chasing power, I think, is directly increasing the lack of rational thinking among the electors to the point that voters are going into, I would say, even a political masochism, you know, that is fed by hate, by lies.
There's a
lot of trivialization these days in the media as well. And there is an increasing power of social media messages, such as TikTok, you know, among young male voters, especially, who are leading, you know, this macho Milei, who is playing, I would say, all the tricks, like a magician, you know. So it's like adding fuel to the fire. So I'm going back to this famous quote in 2000. You probably remember it, Phil. Throw them all out. That was the time, you know, when I moved to Canada. And I still hear those voices in Argentina. So people today in Argentina is now capable of voting for someone who even doesn't represent their interests. Voters are completely dissociated from reality because they feel they don't have any more to lose. And the danger of winning is high.
The Washington Post or somebody had a quote from some individual. They were apparently known in Argentina. And he said, I really hate the people been oppressing us. I want someone new to oppress us.
Those things are real, I mean, right?
I think that speaks to your idea that it's almost suicide.
We see that in many countries these days, you know, because there is something that I also come here, the international context of this election in Argentina, you know, and you just mentioned it with the mention to the BRICS, you know, U.S. versus China and Russia. I personally think there is that all these elements are responding to the struggle of power to control the last frontier of natural resources. You know, we have a lot of lithium, gas, land, you know, and in a world where climate change is already the norm and the reality of wildfires, floods, heat waves are cutting the chances, really, to avoid the transformation from fossil fuels. And these remote countries, such as Argentina, Chile, and Bolivia, still represent a gold mine to exploit.
Yeah, this So we're, there's going to be a division. He doesn't. I notice that this fellow, his party is called the part of the Freedom Advances. I guess it translates Freedom Advances. He doesn't. That party ran for governor in the. I think there are 28 regions where you have a governor. But at any rate, they didn't win any. No wins for them. So he would be rather like Trump in the sense that he seems to be separate from the party.
Yeah, and my concern is that Milei is also going to be part of that club of world leaders trying to perpetrate the fossil fuel era, denying climate change, sending millions of people to poverty and death, probably. And if he wins, he will prove the extreme right always reconstructs at the end. You know, it will be like the triumph of selfishness.
Mm-hmm.
And to be honest, for a world that is falling apart and the same type of president is not too crazy after all. So I'm very concerned, as you can see. I don't want to be doom, you know, monger, but it's such a terrible
scenario. It is new ground when Argentina is a Catholic country, or has been. And apparently the evangelical phenomenon is there. Uh-huh. And when he talks about the Pope, that's evangelical territory because he calls the Pope the devil, et cetera, which is, I have to share this if people don't know it, evangelicals tend to be extremely hostile to Catholics. Uh-huh. So you're really having a culture shift in that country.
Another factor, too, you know, is that he represents, you know, the culture of militarism, you know, that was overthrown after democracy came back to the country in 1985.
Mm-hmm.
And those, you know, probably people remember the genocide in Argentina, you know, babies were stolen from mothers and women who were in prison throughout the country. There were many jails and even babies were, you know, robbed by the dictatorship, during the dictatorship. So there were atrocities committed during those years. Some of those military groups were sent into jail because of those crimes. And there is some sort of comeback of that ideology as well to the Argentinian meltdown. It's all coming together now, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And Milei is actually with a vice president candidate who is representing some of those groups who are very much, you know, looking forward for revenge.
Yes, he seems to, I'm really glad you mentioned the vice presidential candidate, a woman. Her father is a currently serving army officer, right?
Yeah, she's a new generation, of course, but she still represents those values and that type of military culture that ran Argentina for almost a decade.
Mm-hmm. This phenomenon that hasn't been exactly, I don't know if the listeners have heard this, but he wants to dollarize the Argentine economy. And I know that when I read the New York Times and the Washington Post, they're almost schizophrenic. On the one hand, they say he's a madman. On the other hand, they like it that he hates BRICS, he hates China, he hates Russia, he hates the Pope. And he calls himself an anarcho-capitalist, but he's ready to do business with the IMF, and he wants to use U.S. dollars in the foundation of the Argentine economy.
Yeah, but think about, you know, in terms of a Canadian economy point of view, you know, I mean, when you think about, you know, business, making, you know, multilateral, Canada, for example, has, you know, multilateral agreements with so many countries. You know, it's like saying, well, we're not going to sell in China, we're not going to sell our products in India, we're not going to have more any ties to any country that is not part of the system, you know. And even now, you know, Canadians know that that is not possible. So the same thing that happened in Canada today with saying, oh, we're not going to have, you know, more Chinese markets, you know. Mm-hmm. We're not going to be open to Chinese markets. Despite all the politics around, you know, people agree that we can't do that economically. We are in a turbulent world. We need to, you know, use all the resources that we have at disposal to make life livable for people, you know, in their cities. And trying to, you know, go back to old times, you know, Cold War times, you know, or things like that are completely, you know, out of out of place in our world right now. We just came out of a pandemic time. You know, we know the importance of the state, of the vaccines, of the people, you know, taking care of each other. We know that already. There is, and now with climate change, I think those calamities are happening almost every day in every community. So we have to stay together and defend, you know, the portion of the state that still take care of the most of the population that is not the wealthiest, right? So it's really, you know, a cultural problem, I think, that we're facing here with the election in Argentina. And unfortunately, not too far from what Canadians are probably going to face in the future as well.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking to Sandra Farias, who knows whereof she speaks. She's lived in Argentina, studied there, and covered it as a journalist. It bothers me when I read the media here. They are totally dismissive of the renewal front and Sergio Massa, although the numbers really are not terribly, you know, it was a close. There were three names and three parties, and, you know, the actual total number of voters was not that wide a margin. And I wanted to ask, why do they call the when they write about it here, when they're Sergio Massa's party, why do they call it, why do they say Peronista? Why don't they say the name of the party?
Well, it's, let me go back to that. So, you know,
I mean, that's shortcutting at the expense of illiterate readership.
Sergio Massa is also the Ministry of Finance in Argentina at this point, right? So he's part of the government that took power in 2019, okay? Mm-hmm. And he was a politician of the part of the Peronists, because Peronism is not far or right. Peronism is like a full spectrum of politicians, right? So they are Peronists because they believe in the force of the state. That's why they are called Peronists, right? It's like, you know, you want a big state that has a lot of presence in society, you know, providing health systems, providing, you know, education systems, providing, you know, resources for the vulnerable people, social assistance, all those kind of things. So that's the whole range of Peronists, right? And he belongs to that group and still in power in government. But this group of people also is in the third place in this election, you know, because the right wing is growing. It's growing, and because of this context that I explained to you with the economic situation, right? So the right-wing movement is growing to the point that there is a third force as well, because the chances that Milei will win in the first round in October is unlikely. We will probably see a ballotage in November, because the right-wing are divided also between residual followers of Macri and the other political party controlling some of the provincial governments. This is called radicalism. They used to be in power after the democracy returned to the country in the middle 80s. And the leader of this party is called now Together for Change. It's a former minister of Macri, who, by the way, unemployed millions and reduced the pensions of seniors in extreme, causing a lot of poverty among millions. Her name, Patricia Bullrich, is now in third place and trying to keep votes from the right that seems to be all captured these days by Milei. And the official candidate, Sergio Massa, is also a former minister of Cristina Fernandez. He's trying to survive the right-wing wave, offering now these days, I think I read this morning, he was offering a salary supplement and promising, you know, better outcomes after intense negotiations with the Monetary Fund in Washington this week, and among the announced that Argentina will join the BRICS if he's elected starting in January.
How is the distribution of parties in the parliament? This election, will it be a straight-up presidential, or will it involve also the members of the Congress or whatever it is?
Yeah, the members of the Congress are also involved in the presidential election now in October, and that's a really good point, Phil, because you know, you can make changes if you don't have power in Congress. And I think the plan of Milei actually is to abolish Congress. He doesn't want the Congress. Probably he will try to abolish it. But mm-hmm. in case he doesn't get the other right portion of the electorate, the votes of Patricia Bullrich these days, he will try to abolish the Congress. Probably that will be his plan. Although that's also difficult in Argentina to do from one day to the other. So the other chance is that in the best case scenario that Massa is still able to survive this right-wing faction, he will have to probably find some common ground with radicalism, the governors and the people who were in power since middle 80s, and they were defending democracy. And from that perspective, he may be able to catch some of those votes and support for his government. Mm-hmm. But it's going to be a tough scenario, no matter who wins in October, which is now he's just trying to get to the ballot. That's his goal for Massa these days, you know, just trying to get to that second round and not lose in the first round with Milei. So that's his goal these days, and we'll see what happens if he makes it to the ballot in November.
Yeah. I wonder, the vote is coming, what is it, October the 5th?
It's October 22nd, actually.
The 22nd. The winner has to have 45% of the vote, or 40% with a 10-point lead. Is that right?
That's right. That's absolutely correct, Gil. Yeah, that's the situation. So think about this scenario, right? So Milei made 33% now in this primary election. And there was a portion of the right-wing voters who were with Bullrich, but were also with the mayor of the most important city in Argentina, Buenos Aires. And that was also a right-wing group. And that represents 10% of the voters in the election. That 10% is likely to be with Milei for this round. So that's why this is so dangerous, because the numbers are actually adding up for Milei even to win in first round.
Mm. That is a disturbing part. And I was going to, actually, you've answered I was going to ask that question, is are people starting to sort of sober up and look at him more closely, because they're running out of time to avoid what he represents? I've read, for example, that he's trying to pick a fight with what he would call the left, or what he actually says, anybody who says social justice is his enemy. He doesn't like anybody who says the words social justice. And so he says, when I'm president, if they come to the Pink Palace, I think it's called, we will crush them. And uh-huh. it sounds like he's thinking paramilitary, or calling on the generals to form some kind of special junta with him as president.
Well, of course he will need that power, right? Because when you have, I mean, you have to think that in Argentina there was an unrest, a social unrest, you know, in 2000. That was the most internationally, you know, renowned mm-hmm. Social unrest that we had, you know. And that, it was because of the default, you know, the structural debt and the poverty, you know, to a very, very dramatic level. So what happened there, you know, it was a shock. It was a shock to the society. And mm-hmm. and what he's trying to do is also causing some shocks in our economy, because that way, and that also brings, you know, tensions and brings violence to the streets. And the only way to apply all these very drastic economic tactics
to provide an excuse for takeover.
You need to make some shocks, you know, and just make people act with fear. And with people acting with fear, they're able to advance all these political initiatives, right? So we are going to see those events happening if he becomes president. Mm-hmm. And Argentinians are very ballistic. You know, Argentinians are very like, very much like Italians in so many ways. No wonder so many immigrants, Italians.
Well, I'm really glad you raised that.
But, you know,
I was tiptoeing around the fact that you have a very large Italian-Argentine population, and that I've seen it spoken of that the present, I guess we can characterize her as extreme right, certainly someone who is rather warm towards fascism, the Prime Minister of Italy, that, you know, in other words, is having a kind of siren voice to Argentina.
Exactly. Yeah, we're not far from that, I think, you know.
Oh, and, goody.
And we have to you know, there is a progressive peronist that I recommend you to listen to. He's a young voice. He is it's sort of a follower also of Pope Francis. His name is Juan Grabois. And he belongs to the generation of young people who were, you know, coming from really poverty lines and coming from the streets and helping, you know, children on the streets that were, you know, asking for coins on every corner in Argentinian street. And he talks about, you know, this phenomenon, right, that the people is listening to the music of the Pied Piper. But you can't blame the Pied Piper, right?
Yes.
It's because, you know, there's so many...
You have to blame the mice.
Yeah, there were so many mistakes throughout all these years of democracy as well, right? So it's very sad what's happening, but at the same time, it's to open the eyes, right, for many in our society.
I have to raise something. The BRICS meeting in South Africa was quite dramatic. Actually, it's still resonating because it's quite a phenomenon to see the number of countries that were invited and did attend the BRICS meeting. And BRICS has made an invitation to Argentina. Argentina is scheduled to join BRICS in December. And everybody's saying, no, that's not going to happen. But the current leadership said this would be a good development. So I wonder, I have to ask this, how do you think the Americans are kind of in and around this thing, watching, because they hate BRICS, for sure.
Well, I mean, everybody is watching that, I think, right? I mean, we are also in a state of war around the world, you know, where things are very erratic. We it's uncharted territory, what's going to happen with this war in Ukraine. And, you know, under all these troubles, And calamities that are happening around the world with the climate change, I think that no wonder everybody is looking at these things, right? And just trying to understand.
If I'm still on the air, we're speaking with Sandra. I get my notes in front of me to get it right. Farias, we might try to get her back just to say goodbye. If she was making a point, I will raise. Maybe she's still speaking. No, only with you, Phil. I'll just say, I wonder if there is some issue here of race that the Argentines that this man is appealing to, Milei. I think I got it right now. Milei is appealing to. Do not want to think of themselves as Latin or South American. They want to be thinking of themselves as Europeans. And when I read about, and I was going to ask our guest about relations with Brazil, my guess is that the Argentines do not identify with the people of Brazil. It's one thing to have a country, you know, but this phenomenon of a very large Italian Argentine population is not rooted in the same milieu, political milieu that created Bolivar. This is in another milieu.
Yeah, you know, Phil, that at the time of the World Cup, when Argentina defeated a European country, some Nazis in Europe said, we're happy Argentina won because the real European country won the game. Now, of course, he was making his political point, and I think he's insulting the Argentine
that's
people.
Well, yes and no.
Yeah,
but it's a it's a sign of, it's a matter of the demographics we often pretend are not there. Or, you know, and to be geographically part of South America, there's also a history, not all of it pleasant, between relations between these countries. And this issue of, for example, BRICS, you can assume that that would not appeal to that the segment led by Milei. In other words, he considers those people socialists, whatever, but also dark people, frankly, swarthy people, whatever the word is that people use in their little code words, you know. We're going to do our best to, we'll have some explanation. By the way, she's a very brilliant person. I want to, Sandra Farias, I really do appreciate that she gave us the time that she did have. We'll hope to get her back for just a few words. But I want to ask her that question about what the average upper-class Argentine would think of South Africans and Arabs and Asians, you know. So I think we have a shot at talking to her again. We won't. She's given us all, been very generous with her time. By the way, this is the Taylor Report. It is CIUT. And this matter of Trump, I'm really struck, Phil, by the way they talk about Trump. Today's Toronto Star has a vicious cartoon, and we'll come back to that. We have Sandra Farias back. Hey, Sandra, I'm sorry we lost you there, but you were making a great point. It was brilliant. Apologies. Unfortunately, we didn't hear you.
No, I think one of the forces from the universe was trying to disconnect us.
Well, I think I was asking, yes, about U.S. interference, and so they knocked us out of off the air. But they are schizophrenic. On the one hand, they say he's crazy, but I think they really like the idea of the guy who puts his country up for sale and says he loves Americans.
Well, I don't think that it's liking or not. I think that Latin American countries are a really great opportunity for business these days, you know, when the whole world is falling apart and the extractivism, you know, it's going down. And so they see this as the last frontier, right? I mean, there is a gold mine there of lithium. That's the fact, you know. We have a lot of natural resources still in those countries, you know, that are necessary, you know, for the economy of the United States, of the economy of China, you know. So those are very important struggles of power taking place in that scenario there. So it's not about liking or not Milei. I think it's that Massa needs to demonstrate that under his government, he's still going to be willing to do those businesses, you know, and allow those economic powers to come to town, to say it in a few words. And if he doesn't prove that confidence in the markets, you know, that he will be an open player with China and with other powers as well, you know,
that's the best
role. It might play a role there in that support, you know. So they are always, you know, there were too many books, I think, during the 90s about the power of the embassy in Argentina, in Buenos Aires. But the power of the embassy, you know, it's also related to stability. And I think that a figure like Milei, you know, could be very erratic. You know, I don't think that will benefit
they may not trust him. They might prefer someone like...
Because it's erratic. It's unpredictable. We don't know what the madness can create, right? And could be more potential for social unrest, for instability. And under those conditions, you know, no business grows. So it's also, you know, something to think about.
Absolutely. Well, Sandra Farias, you've been full of information and insight. We really appreciate it. I hope we're going to be wanting to talk to you in October, because that's when the thing is going to go off and you're going to have to explain it.
I'll be traveling soon to Argentina, and I'll bring fresh news for your listeners as well. And I will be, you know, watching firsthand the election process, at least the few days before the election. And I'll be back here in Canada for Election Day. Oh, so I will be happy to
very excited
for your show.
Oh, well, thank you. We appreciate it very much.
Okay, have a good day, Bill. See you.
Same to you.
Take care. Bye.
Bye-bye. This is Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I think it is time to cry for Argentina. I think the song was Don't Cry For Me, but I think we could, somebody better write another one, Cry For Me, but here's a bit of music.